Warning: this program contains content that may not be suitable to some listeners. It contains decency, truth, ageless wisdom, a father who cares. It's Generations with Kevin Swanson.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Generations. Welcome. My name is Kevin Swanson. I am a father of five, and that's why I'm on the air with you today. I'm concerned. Our nation is in trouble. And somebody once said, there are those who make things happen, there are those who watch things happen, and then there are those who wonder what happened. Well, part of the goal of this program is to make sure you don't fall in the third category. Unfortunately, most people do fall in the third category, and there aren't very many that actually make things happen. Only about 5% of the people in our world make things happen. But Jesus called us to be those who make things happen and impact the world around us. Jesus called us to be salt, yeast, and light in the world. So what do? If you are a father and you are raising five children in a world that is obviously disintegrating, it is not the world that was being constructed 400 years ago by the Pilgrims and Puritans. No way. This is a world where all of that is dissipating. So what do? When you live in a world where liberties are dissipating, morality is hardly recognizable. Reminds me of the statement from Ben Franklin, either you'll be governed by God or by God you'll be governed. That is, if you lose your morality, if you aren't governed by the laws of God, you are going to be tyrannized. And that is exactly what patterns what is happening in our society today. What do when the family is disintegrating and 36.4% of children are born without fathers? 65% of children are being raised without mothers. That up from just a couple of percentage points a generation ago. What do when a nation 30 years ago decides that you can just start killing babies willy-nilly for convenience? What do when 50 million of your population has been wiped away? What do when you live in a society like that? What do when homosexual pressures are there just about in every aspect of our society, whether it be media, schools, education, whatever? What do? And is there a motivation to make an impact on such a society? Do you lift a finger for God, for Jesus and his kingdom, when everything's falling apart around you? How do you raise your children? What kind of vision do you use in raising your children? At the point where somebody says, I'm going to make an impact, there are two steps that occur in the process. All right. At the point where we are going to make that impact, two steps. First step is the Moses generation. You got to get out of Egypt. That's the first point. You got to get out of Egypt. That's the Moses generation. The second point, the second step, is you need to take over the promised land. That's the Joshua generation. You need to get out of the worldview that has corrupted our institutions, our children, our nation. You got to get out of that worldview and then get a new worldview and impact the culture around you. That's the Joshua generation. And in the history of the world, this has been replayed again and again. There has been a Moses generation. These were the people that came across the Puritans and Pilgrims 400 years ago. It has happened before. And then there was the Joshua generation, and they took over the land. Great men and women have made a difference, and that's how this nation was started 400 years ago. Well, we're going to take over the promised land today on Generations. We're going to revive the principles upon which this nation was founded. We're going to talk with Patrick Henry College's Mike Ferris about the Joshua generation, and that's next on Generations. Stay with us. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. This is Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson, and today we want to talk about the Joshua generation. And the one who coined that term is Mike Ferris. He's president of Patrick Henry College, founder of Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and the author of his most recent book, The Joshua Generation. Mike, welcome to Generations again.
Hi, Kevin. Good to talk to you.
It's good to have you with us. Mike, you coined the term, I think. I can't remember anybody else using it before you, the Joshua generation. What did you intend with that term?
I was having a conversation with a homeschool dad that I had represented in the Supreme Court of Michigan, and we were talking about comparing the first generation of homeschoolers with the second generation. And I was basically trying to give the idea that there's a whole lot of work left to be done, that we've left Egypt, but we've got to seize the land. The giants are still there, the giants of abortion, the giants of pornography, homosexual marriage, many other things. And so my goal for this generation of young people is they would be the giants, the ones who take the giants in the land and take this land back for the principles it was founded upon.
And effectively make a significant influence on our institutions, our culture. Do you think there are Christian homeschool children graduating from high schools right now who want to make a difference? Are you seeing that there is a collection of these families out there that want to make that Joshua generation impact?
There's no doubt. That is a very prominent desire among many, many families, and they've effectively transmitted that to their children. I've got a group of them at Patrick Henry College. We're not the only ones that feel that way, but out of 325 students or so, about 300 of them have been homeschooled, and they're all committed to the idea of changing this culture for the principles of Christ.
Mike, this is exciting to see the Joshua generation poised to make an impact. But let's talk about that impact for just a moment. You wrote the book, The Joshua Generation, and we're looking at influencing our culture. What are the centers of influence? Where do Christian families and Christian kids graduating from high school right now want to poise themselves to make an impact?
Well, where the society is looking for leaders is from the elite academic institutions. The plain facts are that the vast majority of the federal court judges are from the top few law schools. The vast majority, a significant portion, let's say, of the United States Senate is made up of graduates of top schools, a lot of them top law schools. And you'll see that the same principle in many areas of endeavor is that the people who graduated from the top schools get the top jobs. It's the way our system works on a regular basis. And in some respects, it's not too surprising and it's not very discouraging, except for the philosophy that's represented by those top schools. Therein lies the problem.
Now, when you talk about politics, politics is a center of power, a center of influence. There are certain positions that we can get into where we can make significant impact, but it's not just politics, is it? It's media, it's education, it's other areas of endeavor as well.
Exactly. Basically, wherever words reign supreme, there are influences of power that we can make an impact. I mean, science and math and all those things, they have their place as well. And I'm sure that there'd be something from a Christian perspective that could really articulate why that's so important. It's just not the field, those are not the fields that I'm familiar with. I am more used to the world of ideas, the world of words, and whether it's literature or media or the news broadcasting industry or law or politics or any number of things, it really matters. Ideas matter, words matter.
Now, I think somewhere in your book, Mike, you quoted a statistic that the majority of kids in church at 18 are out of church at 29. Why is that? What is happening to Christian children?
Well, the exact number is that for every 100 teens who attend church every Sunday when they are 18 years old, when they are 29, only 42 of them will go to church at all. I think the principal reason that we're seeing that is that about 60% of our society goes to college during those period, those years.
Wow.
And so you see a tremendous drop-off represented by the people who are going to college. And there was a recent article on the Internet called Red States, Blue States. It was written by a professor at Northwestern University who basically declares, you know, don't be so discouraged if all these conservative red states are prevailing, because the parents who live in these states are continuing to drop their kids off at the state colleges and the secular colleges, and we're turning them into blue state type thinkers. And he says, you know, once they drop them off out of their SUV, you know, leaving their Bible Belt thinking behind, I've got them. And that's what's going on in the colleges, and that's a big part of it. It's not the only story, but that's a big part of the reason why young people are dropping away from the principles that their families raised them in, including church.
And Mike, you made the point that ideas are powerful things. They really do change the way we live and the way we do our institutions. And when it comes to the ideas taught in public universities, in Ivy League schools, their focus is really more of a secular humanist worldview. And we were just discussing a couple of days ago on Generations this University of California requirement that Christian high schools carry secular humanist textbooks in the key worldview areas, history, science, literature, etc. And there are Christian schools adapting their curriculum so that they will remain eligible for entrance into these universities. Now, we've got a problem here. We've got a lot of Christians who want to sort of kowtow to that worldview, but is it possible that we can make an end run around it? It's sort of that Puritan-Pilgrim tension that existed at the founding of this nation. Do we separate from the system? Do we make an end run around the system? Or do we stay in the system, stay in the Ivy League schools, and try to reform or reform the system from the inside? How do you think parents should grapple with those decisions? Secular university, Christians university, Patrick Henry College, or those sorts of things?
Well, obviously, I, being the president of Patrick Henry College, which is a Christian college with a very high-end academic program, we've attracted very strong kids, higher SAT scores than any school in the UC system, including Berkeley, which is their flagship school. My response is that the Christian university system needs to basically take over the Ivy League mentality again. I don't think it's physically or reasonably possible within our lifetime to actually take over Harvard or Yale. I think we have to recreate it. Now, I strongly believe in the priesthood of the believer, and so I don't want to say that that's what every family should conclude, but yeah. I would urge every family to turn to Romans chapter 1 and look at that for all their educational decisions. And the Bible says, for since they didn't think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, God turned them over to a depraved mind to do that which ought not to be done. And that's the result of an education that leaves God out. And in the most dominant form of educational philosophy at the college and university level isn't just leaving God out in some kind of neutral fashion. It is a direct antagonistic attack upon the principles of God, upon His creation, upon His power and His goodness. And so, I don't know how a person can reconcile that with Romans 1, sending their kids to a secular college for the worldview kind of training. If they were taking auto mechanics or some real technical course where there's not a philosophical component, that's different. But when they're taking literature, history, philosophy, all those kinds of things.
I remember an article from John Leo commenting on the Ivy League schools today. He sent his daughter there, and pornography for credit classes, the nude dorms, and he was trying to make a justification for keeping his child in that school. But the Ivy League schools have declined a great deal over the years. It's obviously a worldview decline that results in sort of all of these other things, and it's a decline in education as well, isn't it?
It has, or at least it's not all that it's cracked up to be. I took a team of four students from Patrick Henry College to Oxford University, in fact, a year ago today. And we had a debate tournament. It's called Moot Court, which is legal debate. And our final round was in front of the two highest judges of England, who were both graduates of the college that we were going against. And these were, using undergraduate students. And the English legal training system is different, and so their undergraduate program is law school. So we were going against law students, against our undergrads, and we beat them in Oxford, and then we returned the favor and beat them again in Virginia in front of the Virginia Supreme Court. And so a five-year-old Christian institution took on one of the top secular colleges in the world, Oxford, and we beat them. And so it's not that we're better than Oxford, but we're in their league. If a five-year-old Christian institution can do that, then I think that the Christian community ought to be encouraged that it is possible. It is, we don't have to wait hundreds of years to be able to catch up with the world in terms of academic excellence. We can do it now if we set our minds to it and are deliberately committed to the idea that we're going to change the way we train our young people and make them the leaders of society with the worldview that will make us free.
Mike, there are parents listening right now whose children are younger, 12, 13, early teens. What can parents do right now to prepare their young people to make an impact? How can they begin to define that worldview prior to college?
Well, there's no substitute for a deep and abiding knowledge of the Word of God. And so you start there.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I think that if we just keep in mind the general idea of have our children trained in a way similar to the way the founding fathers were trained, it's a good idea. One-on-one education, homeschooling is obviously a great approach, the approach that our family uses, and I think is the strongest approach. But finding a Christian perspective on education that has a deep study of history, we understand where we're coming from, we understand literature, we've read some of the great books, some of the great stories of all time. Very good lessons in some of these great pieces of literature. So I think that a classically oriented, in the sense of giving them the kind of education that stood the test of time over the centuries, that's the approach I would encourage. Also, especially for homeschoolers, if they can get their kids involved in debate, there's a great program, the National NCFCA.org is their website, and I can't even remember what those initials stand for. But the debate program is a tremendous opportunity for trained children in the ability to defend the Christian worldview.
Mike, we only have a minute or so left, but why don't you describe your vision for our radio audience today? You're Moses. You're standing on the banks of Jordan looking out over the promised land. You see the giants in the land. You see abortion, homosexuality, the growth of government, the dissipation of liberties, other things. And you're looking out over 2040, 2050. You're looking out over the Joshua generation. What's your vision for them?
I really believe that our young people can be a disproportionate percentage of the top leaders of this country. I think that our young people can be the ones who make that 6-3 ruling on the Supreme Court of the United States to reverse Roe versus Wade. I think that we can be the ones who declare that there is no constitutional right to homosexual marriage. I think that we can be the ones that are delivering the news in a way that promotes the principles of freedom and liberty, and rather than tear it down. One of my favorite pipe dreams is what I think is very possible is one of the members of the Joshua generation walks down the aisle at the Academy Awards and gets the Oscar for directing and producing the best picture of the year, which is a Winsome Folsom story, and their phone rings. And it's the President of the United States, who was their roommate at a fine Christian college, congratulating them on their win. To me, the only part of that that's the pipe dream is that the cell phone actually works.
Yeah.
The rest of it, I think, can be very real.
And it's happened before.
We saw it happen at the founding of this nation, and there's no reason that generation of parents is any better than we are. They're just simply dedicated, and they train their children in the principles of liberty, and they brought forward the principles. We can do it again.
Amen. Without a vision, the people perish. And folks, you've got a vision today from Dr. Michael Ferris, president of Patrick Henry College. Thanks, Mike, for joining us.
You're welcome, Kevin.
And folks, we'll be back in just a moment to tell you how to get a copy of The Joshua Generations. Be back in a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back on Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson today. Dr. Michael Ferris from Patrick Henry College with us on Generations. And his latest book, The Joshua Generation, is a great find. I recommend this book to you. It will give you vision for the future of this nation. And we need that today. We need some optimism. We need some optimism. You're going to get it with this book, The Joshua Generation, by Mike Ferris. You can get the book by calling our resource center in Parker, 877-842-CHEC, or checkbooks.com, checbooks.com, on the web. The Joshua Generation by Mike Ferris. You can interact with this program by emailing me, Kevin at check.org. That's Kevin at chec.org. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, inviting you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.